All across Wisconsin from Civic Media, this is Up North News Radio. Real information, good conversation, unabashedly Wisconsin. Here's the founding editor of Up North News, Pat Kreitlow.
I'm used to saying welcome to another beautiful day from our Lake Wasota studio, but I can no longer confirm that at this hour of the day because we're not on from 8 to 11 anymore. We're on when it's dark, but I'm pretty sure it's going to be a beautiful day on Lake Wasota. So welcome. Glad to have you up here at the cabin on this Monday, October 31st. 8 days until Election Day, and joining us in a little bit, Angela Lang from Block will talk about former President Barack Obama's visit to Wisconsin on Saturday and the work that's got to be done to boost election turnout in advance of what's happening next Tuesday. You can help with that by voting early. That's happening right now in election clerk's offices all over the state. You can go to myvote.wi.gov, find out your local election clerk's contact information, find out when the hours are, and go do it, as I did the other day up at the Eagle Point Town Hall here in Chippewa County. And I also shot a little video that we were going to post at the Up North News social media feeds. And the reason I bring that up is that the video closes with me standing at a drop box, because there is a drop box outside my town hall. And to tell people, for the love of God, don't use it. Don't use it. Yes, Aaron.
Very dumb. Makes no sense.
Well, here's the thing. Here's the rest of the story is, you know, people have said, well, why don't they take it down? Well, there's actually pretty good reason for this. First off, there's signage on the box, as there are in others, saying, don't put your ballots in here. This is not a legal place to put ballots. Some places like the city of Madison have dressed it up with, you know, big signs about, you know, why they can't be used because of a state Supreme Court ruling. Talking to my town clerk, and I'm sure others would tell you the same. When they made the move to put the drop boxes in, they were following some very good advice about, you know, it's a heavy duty box. It is, you know, put on a concrete pad. There are security cameras pointed at it. Still, you know, they did everything right to make sure that people could have the convenience of a drop box without having to go through, you know, the extra work of coming during business hours or only voting on election day when maybe they can't get off work or don't have transportation. All of these things that local clerks did right to encourage more people to vote, to allow more people to vote, all were undone because of this continued temper tantrum after the guy who lost in 2020 went through with his plan to lie about the election and continues to do it. And enough people still believe him, or my belief is they don't actually believe him, but they do see a political strategy that enables them to win elections and either take power or hold power, that they're going along with it. But there are plenty of clerks and plenty of other people like me that believe that this bubble will burst and that we can come through on the other side and eventually use those drop boxes again and once again work toward making voting easier, because A, it should be, and B, our elections were already safe. They are already secure. They were already accurate. They were being run just fine until one political class decided to try to undermine democracy, because that was the only way they could win. They couldn't win on the issues. As we said in the last hour, you know, former President Obama was in Milwaukee over the weekend reminding people that this is all they got is just tax cuts and maybe threatening to cut Social Security. Ron Johnson was a special target of what former President Obama had to say. We'll give a little listen to this. Aaron, we'll dump out of her running late, but here's a little bit about Barack Obama on Ron Johnson.
If you can afford a private plane, you don't need a tax break. But no, he fought for this. And then his adult children bought not one, not two, but three private planes, because apparently carpooling was not an option. Now, I mean, You need three? Meanwhile, Senator Johnson voted to raise the retirement age to 70, supported a plan that would put Social Security and Medicare on the chopping block every single year. Each year you'd have to vote to renew this thing. I mean, think about it, because Washington works so well. That's, you want your Social Security and Medicare reliant on Congress every year. He's called Social Security a Ponzi scheme. Said that it's candy that the left is giving away. The point is, some of you here are on Social Security. Some of your parents are on Social Security. Some of your grandparents are on Social Security. You know why they have Social Security? Because they worked for it.
Exactly.
They worked hard jobs for it.
That's exactly it. You worked for it. You paid into it. You created this. It's not candy. It's not a giveaway. But again, when you are part of a political class, as Senator Ron Johnson is, that wants to paint all of government as bad and that all spending is bad because we should depend on the benevolence of millionaires who can buy private jets, that's a recipe for government that truly doesn't work. Angela Lang is going to talk more about that with us in the next segment. You're up north. Welcome back. This is Up North News Radio, Monday, October 31st. I'm Pat Kreitlow, joined now by Angela Lang from Black Leaders Organizing Communities, Block by Block, Black Lives Matter, Black Girl Magic. Love every hashtag on the Twitter feed. Once an organizer, always an organizer. And unlike a lot of us who are passively aggressive, she notes that she's aggressively passive. And that's what you really, it's what you need at this time of year. She's the one who's not afraid to put up every so often something like, I just need a nap. But it's because she works the other 25 hours of the day if she could. Angela, how are you? Good morning.
I'm good. I'm actually surprised that I have more energy than anticipated this early and 8 days from the election.
It's like I said, the number changes every day, but the wording is the same. I can do anything for 8 more days. I'm going to need a break after that, but we can do anything for 8 more days. Your work was boosted a bit thanks to, you know, a little bit of a show on Saturday. There were a few people that came to town, a former president, the entire Democratic ticket, and things like that. Before we get to the contents of the rally, what exactly was said, let's get to the purpose behind it. This is a state that is notoriously close in elections, surely comes down to turnout. From that perspective, did you feel the event, A, was worth setting up, and B, would have benefits, would pay off?
Absolutely. It was important for us to be in attendance. We took a break from doors in order to be there, and we brought our whole team. There was roughly 65 folks between our ambassadors and our staff, and it was something that we decided that we wanted to share this moment together, and I do think it was incredibly impactful. The energy and the momentum was palatable, and I think it gave our team, and myself included, really that last bit of energy, I think, that we need to head into the last few days. So I absolutely was happy to be there. And, you know, even a couple of weeks ago, I was like, okay, when's Obama coming? He came here in 18. When is he coming? Because I think some people were almost looking for him at this point.
I think that's very true. And that what people need to know about people who are active in politics as a volunteer, as a candidate, you know, what have you, is that there's a lot of the same old day after day. You're doing doors, you're making phone calls, you're putting packets together and such. And you don't mind doing that. But every so often there needs to be that reward, which is a little bit more than a pizza. Sometimes it's got to be an event. Sometimes it's the candidate comes to visit. Sometimes it's you know, the big VIP magic, you know, something like this. But what that does is it really recharges the batteries for that final push. And that's what President Obama is trying to do in several states coming into this. But frankly, and let's you know, be direct about going toward one of the goals of this, is Wisconsin Democrats know that there's two things they badly need? Well, for turnout overall, but they need young adult voter turnout, and they need Black turnout, communities of color to be turning out. We've always known that as a challenge. Is it still fair to describe it as a challenge as you head into these final 8 days to get folks to appreciate the value of their vote and to show up next Tuesday, if not before?
You know, I think it's always going to be a challenge as long as we have things like voter suppression and we have racist ads and dog whistles, right? All of these things are incredible challenges that, you know, really are signaled to our own community. And for us, we want to make sure that everybody understands the power that they have within their vote. But we also want to be honest. And, you know, I think there some people tell people, oh, this is the most important election of your lifetime. You just need to vote and everything is going to, you know, going to get better. We want to tell people that voting is just the first step. Voting is not the silver bullet, but it is the very, very first step and is the most important step, I would argue. But then we also want to see our vote through. So we want to be able to hold candidates accountable. We are still engaged in the civic process on a year-round basis too.
That's a big thing for us, is to be involved. You know, civic engagement is and should be a year-round thing. For those who not, for those for whom it's more of a casual thing, yes, it is easy to get you know, feelings that, well, you know, what does it really matter, especially this year when by any measure we are exposed to the most wildly racist ads that, you know, that put the Willie Horton campaign to shame back in 1988. I have an audience here where I can say repeatedly, I can remind them repeatedly that the worst of those ads is being put together by just a couple of billionaires who formed a super PAC because they got hundreds of millions of dollars in tax breaks directly because of Ron Johnson. So they can invest tens of millions of that savings into these ads to protect him. And they are willing to say and do anything to protect their millions. But I can do that multiple times on the radio. It's got to be, it's a challenge to explain to other disillusioned voters the story behind why, that it's not a paintbrush about, you know, all of Wisconsin or even all of Wisconsin conservatives, but it's just a few people who are just notoriously keeping garbage on this campaign.
Yeah, and that makes our job on doors that much more important, right? Because these ads, the mailers where they darkened the lieutenant governor's skin color, right? Like, those are all one-sided conversations. And so when we're on doors, we're able to break through that. We're having a two-way conversation. We're able to get into the nuance. We're able to say, hey, what are your concerns about these ads? We're kind of playing PolitiFact, you know, on the doors these days with some folks. And then, you know, we're able to also re-energize some people who may have been discouraged. I'd be lying if I said for about a month ago, doors were tough, right? When we were in the thick of all the ads and they were back to back and you couldn't escape them. And people felt that, oh, you know, are people hitting back hard enough? It was difficult. But we're seeing more and more people understand the context. People understand that you kind of can just say anything these days because there isn't some institution that's, you know, outside of PolitiFact that's like, nope, you can't air that, right? And I think people are seeing it for what it is. And I was really glad to hear President Obama actually mention some of that. He kind of made a joke and said, Mandela, get your birth certificate out, right? because it's kind of the same things that are happening. And I think people are understanding too, the message isn't resonating with these ads because we can't even get past how racist they are. And so it's actually kind of backfiring and it's turning to this point where people may have been upset or sad. You know, it was really hard to watch Lieutenant Governor go through those things. But at the same time, that turned us into having more and more momentum because we see that racism is a driving factor in their campaign, and we're not going to let that happen.
So getting to the content of the rally, then, you mentioned the former president noting the way that Lieutenant Governor Mandela Barnes is being treated in these ads. From the standpoint of motivating people in the crowd and beyond the crowd, I mean, look, obviously he's talking to, you know, he's preaching to the already converted. You know, they by and large are going to vote. But do you feel like what he said is going to carry over and help drive a few more people to, you know, decide that they should vote and not sit this out?
I do, because I think everybody that was in that room that felt that energy, that felt that excitement, is going to go talk about it with their friends and their families. I'm really excited in a couple hours to debrief the event with our team. We had some heartfelt, I think, discussions in our group chat afterwards about what it meant for all of us to be there and to share in that moment. We also saw a lot of like younger kids that can't even vote that were so excited. Kids that probably weren't even alive when Barack Obama was even elected, but they were so excited to be there because they understood the importance and significance of it. And like I said, every single person there is going to continue to talk about it the way that we are too. You know, at 7 a.m., we are still very excited and fired up. And I do think it's going to be able to resonate. And people saw that the former president understood the importance of this election. And they also understand the importance of our vote and what it means for him to be here for our community too.
I'm not going to have you go through everybody that spoke there, obviously. So I just want to ask one more question in terms of all the candidates who spoke. Can you share something that stood out that one of them said that was, it might've been inspirational. It might've been funny. It might've been, you know, a pointed attack that we haven't heard in the TV commercials. What was something you heard from a candidate that, you know, even stays with you now here on Monday morning?
Yeah, I mean, I think I'm still thinking about Mandela's speech, right? And what it meant. And, you know, we were talking about it as we were waiting for the program to start, just how powerful it is to have our first Black lieutenant governor running for the first Black senator from Wisconsin, opening for the first Black president. Like all of that, I think is very significant. And a lot of it was his words. You know, we could talk about all the things that he said, but one of the things that really got me was at the end when everyone started chanting his name. And you saw kind of that emotion, that sense of pride and that humility, right? And I think that really underscores the type of person that Mandela is. Very humble, very happy to be here. I've worked hard and I'm being accepted in ways that I think, you know, he wasn't through these TV ads. And so that was, for me, I think a moment that I keep reflecting on, you know, when he kind of just, you know, took it in for a moment and really, I think, understood the gravity of that moment and the significance of that. And that's something I keep replaying over to this day.
And it makes sense that again, we want to see ourselves in our leaders, and or you know, same goes in our athletes and our teachers, what have you. And that representation, I think, also carries over beyond skin color, beyond gender, although gender is a big one as well. But even something like in my case, growing up in a very poor family, to see anybody who has worked their way up from a family that did not have a lot as well, and be able to use the opportunities that they have to rise to the point where they're running for U.S. Senate or they are serving as governor of a state, you know, that level of representation, I think, also made an impression on that crowd and many others around the state.
I mean, I tell people all the time, one of the things that I find the most special and beautiful about Mandela's campaign is that it's not just representation for representation's sake. It's not like, oh, Black is, you know, supporting him because he's Black. There are so many people that see themselves reflected in him and his campaign. And, you know, whether you're on the north side of Milwaukee or in the Northwoods of Wisconsin, you are able to identify with him as a farmer, as a worker, as a union member, as an organizer. There's so many ways that people can see themselves reflected in him and his campaign. And I think that's something very powerful, specifically in Wisconsin.
So we head into this final week to sort of bring it back to Block and Black leaders organizing communities. What do things look like for the next 7-8 days for you?
We are busy knocking doors. We have some press and some special guests that are in our office to help document it. So you may see us on TV in the next few days, but we are hitting as many doors as possible. Our team is starting to push as hard as they can. They feel personally invested. So getting out the vote, talking to as many people as possible in the last final days.
And to carry that message over to other folks listening all around Wisconsin on their local radio stations, for them too, we're almost moving past persuasion. It's more get out the vote, more motivate people, and you think that same spirit of motivation can carry through the rest of the state?
Absolutely. I think there's a certain energy and a certain spark that is here that I think we don't always see all the time. I was saying I've worked in politics for quite some time now, and I'm probably the most invested in specifically Mandela's campaign than I have been in a long time. And I think a lot of people feel the same way, and it's going to be a nail biter. So early vote if you can, and bring a friend as well.
You can learn more at the website Block by Block, that's B-L-O-C, blockbyblock.org, or on Twitter and Facebook, Block by Block M-K-E. Angela Lang, so great to talk to you. Have a great week and take good care, and we'll look forward to talking to you on the backside of all this.
Yes, thanks for having me.
All right, have a great day. We'll continue our visit here looking at Wisconsin headlines, and yes, we'll have to talk about the Packers one more time. All coming up, you're up north.
You can reach our show at 715-388-7155 or send an email to radio at upnorthnewswi.com. Here's Pat Kreitler.
Buffalo Bills receiver Stephon Diggs had a game-high 6 catches for 108 yards in a 27-17 win over the Packers, who are off to their worst start 8 games into a season under Aaron Rodgers. It's just, how did my wife put it? She talked about how when she was growing up in the 70s and 80s, you know, the Packers were terrible. They were just always terrible, but they still watched every game, you know, because they're Packer fans. They're, you know, you're in Green Bay. And they, you know, he said all of her uncles would just, you know, drink beer and complain about, you know, the lousy play calling. And at one point after, I think, one of the Buffalo touchdowns, she leaned over to me and she's like, I can hear my uncles. And I think that's where we might be. The Packers are missing any kind of a, you know, downfield threat. What with Devontae Adams being gone, and that's still a big concern. Aaron Rodgers completed just 3 passes beyond 20 yards. Meanwhile, the Bills, for the 3rd game in a row, have beat a former NFL MVP quarterback. The loss for the Packers ends Rodgers' streak of 13 straight wins in prime time. And one stat I was not aware of until yesterday, the Green Bay Packers have never beaten the Bills in Buffalo, ever. It's the one team that they still haven't won a road game against. They're now 0-7 in Buffalo. The Packers are in part of a 3-game road stretch, and that means one more game next Sunday in Detroit. So we will we'll be following that. I was looking for the game time. Don't have it in front of me. I apologize for that. But, you know, maybe against Detroit, maybe a division game, we can right the ship. Back to elections and poll workers in Wisconsin and getting trained for conflict. This is an important story that I see here from the Associated Press, because there needs to be a counter to the remarks that we passed along last week from Senator Ron Johnson, that they have all of these people trained who are going to be watching the polls as part of an election integrity project. Well, if you hear integrity, you know, coming from folks like Ron Johnson, remember the word that he actually means is intimidation. It's a voter intimidation project. And the cure for that will be poll workers who are properly trained, as they are in Wisconsin, but even more so this year, to be up to speed on the rules of what is and what isn't allowed, and to be sure that people who show up to be poll watchers adhere to those rules and do not engage in any way, shape, or form with voter intimidation, which may include, for example, you know, an undue number of challenges, you know, that are rooted in no evidence whatsoever, or just other things that are said. So the Associated Press story begins with talking about Claire Woodall-Vogue, executive director of the City of Milwaukee Election Commission, and how she surveyed about 20 poll workers gathered in a classroom in a city building that was stuffed with election supplies and spoke frankly about the tense environment that they may face when the city expects more people watching their work than ever before. when, you know, she asked who's worried about these kinds of things, she raised her own hand along with a few of the other workers. And they're not alone. Election officials across the country are bracing for confrontational poll watchers who have been fueled by lies about the legitimacy of the 2020 election. And the continued talk from people like Ron Johnson, who say to, you know, they say, we want to get this message to the election commission and to local clerks. We're watching you like a hawk. Well, if you'd been watching like a hawk in 2020, you would have seen that there was no cheating, no fraud, no nothing. They pointed out things that to them looked funny that have actually been a part of elections for the longest time, whether it's drop boxes or whether it's ballots that are counted well into the night. Because again, you're talking about a big city. Takes a long time to count them. It isn't like up here, you know, in Chippewa Falls, where there's far fewer ballots to count. And if you don't allow absentee ballots to be opened up and counted until election day itself, it just makes the night that much longer. But again, we've already known that. We've already known about central count facilities and that those too are adequately watched and supervised and the machines are audited. And so there's never been anything there untoward unless you want to make it sound that way. And then you say, as Johnson did last week, you know, we're just raising questions. People have questions, you know. Well, having questions is not the same as having facts. And if you're questioning the legitimacy of something, then you'd better be prepared to do more than raise questions. You'd better be prepared to have evidence. Unfortunately, that's not the case, which is why election officials nationally are concerned about a flood of conspiracy theorists signing up to work as poll watchers, particularly in swing states like Wisconsin. Wisconsin requires poll workers to be trained only every 2 years, but Milwaukee's been offering much more frequent training than in elections past, including informational videos and one-hour sessions focused on specific topics like voter registration. The content, by and large, remains unchanged. And this would be a good place to note as well that the Wisconsin Elections Commission put together a series of four videos called Voting 101 or Elections 101. Either way, if you go to the Wisconsin Elections Commission website at elections.wi.gov, you will find a link there to the video series. It is primarily geared toward high school students that can watch these videos. It's got little, you know, pop quizzes in the middle of them to reinforce the lessons. And it's a great way to make sure that people, when they turn 18, feel like they know a little bit more about the process and feel, again, empowered rather than confused when it comes time to vote. But the videos aren't just for high school students or for anybody who can watch online and wants to learn a bit more. So the Associated Press, getting back to that story about what was happening with the training in Milwaukee, Claire Woodall-Vogg was presenting to an experienced group of poll watchers known as chief inspectors, the people responsible for directing workers at individual polling places. The training turned on how to handle potential problems. And Woodall-Vogg was careful to note that observers play a vital role in our democracy, but also said she did not want workers to feel threatened by them. She demonstrated how to tape off sections where observers can stand between 3 and 8 feet from voter check-in and registration areas. She said, take your tape, make a line and say, this is the observer area, or make a box and say, please don't leave this area. Violators first get a warning. If they do it again, I'll continue to mark that violators get a warning. If they do it again, they're ordered to leave. If someone refuses, police are called. Woodall-Vogg also walked workers through how to handle challenges to voter eligibility based on a voter's race or the language they speak. Such challenges are unacceptable, and they should get a warning as frivolous. And an observer who makes a second frivolous challenge would be ordered to leave. Now, some poll workers who spoke to the Associated Press said they expect to see conflict, but they're ready for it. The story quotes 70-year-old Andrea Nebhard, who has worked elections for more than a decade, saying, I'm not afraid. I have a calling to serve. Another woman, age 46, said, I'm a problem solver, so I will de-escalate if necessary, and I will call the proper authority if necessary. Some workers acknowledge that they, you know, are a little bit nervous. Avril Fletcher recounted having to call the police during the August primary when a voter, convinced he had been deliberately locked out of a polling place, threw chairs and threatened workers. She had to wait 35 minutes for officers who'd been busy elsewhere handling a pair of shootings in the Milwaukee area. But Woodall Vogue assured the managers that Fletcher's experience is not going to happen again. Federal law enforcement is also on standby. Four assistant U.S. attorneys are assigned to oversee Election Day in Wisconsin and deal with any threats of violence to election staff and complaints of voting rights concerns. And the FBI has stationed agents throughout the country to address allegations of election fraud and other election abuses. So, again, we are going to have people who are going to be skeptical showing up as poll watchers. That's okay. Skepticism is all right, because sometimes the only way you learn is to be skeptical about something and then have some firsthand exposure to what's going on. Learn when you see what happens at the polling places, when you see the security efforts, when you see the accuracy, when you see the sense of service, you're bound to say that, well, maybe there's still some funny business elsewhere, but my polling place is in good hands. And you know why? Because it is. I'm not expecting that every skeptic is going to go to a polling place and walk away understanding that Donald Trump was lying to their faces and that all these other conspiracy theorists are either in need of, you know, other services, or they are so callous as to be spreading conspiracies simply to advance a partisan position. But if folks at least feel better about their hometown polling place, then, you know, that's a hopeful thing. That's what we need in order to, you know, increase faith in elections, which should be there already, should be strong already. And yet it's being undermined far too often. It is a quarter to the hour. Here's where I would want to tell you about the weather, but there's not going to be a lot to say about it simply because it's going to be so quiet. High pressure sitting over the Rockies, keeping things very calm and quiet here. And as a result, we're going to have temperatures in the 60s, maybe the 70s, you know, by midweek. We'll look at a change maybe Thursday into Friday. But in the meantime, all across Wisconsin, where you have the combines are just working the fields like crazy, they're going to have good conditions. And that's exactly what we need at this time of year. Mark from Prairie du Sac, a regular morning caller, joins us. I hope we haven't thrown him off too much with the change of host, but Mark, glad you're here. Good morning.
No, not throwing me off a whole lot. And I guess one of my main concerns is why the federal government isn't really stepping in forcefully and taking care of these places where there's people, like in Arizona, where they're showing up with firearms and wearing face masks. On the face of it, that is just a threat. Pure and simple. I mean, it's just intimidation tactics that the Klan used back in the day, and I guess it's resurfaced. I mean,
you know what it is? You know what it is, Mark? What really got me over the weekend, I'm so glad you brought this up, was that a Trump-appointed judge, said that these people in Arizona who are, you know, wearing masks and carrying weapons, but if they're not, like, you know, they're not intimidating people, they have First Amendment rights. And yet, Mark, you can't in Georgia bring water or food to somebody standing in line to vote. It's crazy.
It is just ridiculous. I mean, that's you know, that you can't you're buying somebody's vote if they're in line for standing there for six hours, which is ridiculous in the first place. There's not enough polling places and or machine or facilities available to allow people to vote. But it just is ridiculous. The fact that this Trump judge did this, and the Supreme Court would probably, the judge should be impeached. I mean, the pure and simple, I mean, that is the kind of intimidation tactics, you know, that you and I likely read about in our history yep. books. Now we're seeing revisited because Donald Trump decided to lie and say, oh, there's cheating in this election. There was no cheating in this election.
No. There wasn't. I'm sorry, Mark, didn't mean to step on you. I was just looking at the clock here. I was just going to wrap things up by saying, yes, you're absolutely right, that that is exactly what's going on. We just have to bear in mind the answer to intimidation is not more intimidation. We don't want to get involved in a tit for tat, but we do want to call attention to those who are trying to intimidate voters so that we can put an end to that. Back after this, you're up north.
Thought I'd see you one more time again. There's just a
few... it was somebody else's line. I don't have the person's name to give proper credit. When they put up over the weekend that now that Elon Musk has taken over, Twitter is crashing and burning faster than a Tesla. And there's just no other way to look at it, that Twitter, which was already sketchy, depending on, you know, what all you would subject yourself to in your feed, has managed to get worse now that Elon Musk took over. And over the weekend began plans to lay off at least 25% of the company workforce. At one point promised to lay off 75% of the workforce, but has now walked that back and said that, you know, plans right now might be to eliminate 50% of the workforce, even as they are allegedly discussing what should be the site's approach to content moderation. Well, anybody that follows Twitter at all understands that content moderation all but went out the window the moment that Elon Musk walked in the door. And that, of course, just gets to somebody like me, who was raised with the fairness doctrine and, you know, actual licensing requirements to operate in the public interest. You know, it just hits us like, wait a minute, how is this a thing? Again, you know, the First Amendment can take you to a certain point, but there's also something to be said about a private enterprise not moderating its content and exposing its users to God knows what next could happen on this platform. And if you've got, say, any kids who are exposed to it, what are they going to see? What are they going to learn about? But I guess more importantly for our discussions, what are potential voters going to be reading about that are going to go through? What kind of hatred are they going to see? What kind of violent rhetoric is going to be, you know, allowed to just flourish in the name of, you know, free speech for all, unfettered? Look, this journalist here is going to remind you that, you know, the right to free speech is not unlimited in terms of, you know, yelling fire in a crowded theater, hate speech, what have you. Same thing can be said for guns, but that's another topic. You know, government exists to set the rules that a society wants that will keep a society safe and secure. And when you have companies that can reach all around the world, much less every citizen, and essentially bring in a pipeline of falsehoods, violent rhetoric, racism, whatever, what have you, that has to make you pause. Now, I mean, I and others will stay on Twitter for at least for now, because it is a platform that allows for communication of ideas and points of view. But much as I've said before, I can't believe nobody has come up with a plausible competitor to Facebook. The same has got to be said about Twitter. I mean, there's nothing set in stone that these two platforms have to last forever. You know, none of us are using America Online anymore or CompuServe or what have you. So there will be something else. And perhaps what Elon Musk is doing to Twitter just might hasten that for some folks who like to follow, you know, continuous content and news that's out there.
And I think that most people would agree that not only is it not set in stone that those have to be around forever, I think most people would prefer that they are not around forever. I know I would.
Yeah, amen to that. Let's see. Over the weekend, there's a story from Upfront put forth by WISN-TV that says, on the topic of abortion, Senator Ron Johnson wouldn't say how he would vote on his own proposed abortion referendum. He did say that if reelected, he would pressure Republican state lawmakers to put the issue before voters, which I don't believe for a moment, and neither should you, because Governor Evers provided that opportunity. For those of you who didn't follow this previously, Ron Johnson has given multiple positions on abortion. All of them would rip away a woman's reproductive health rights, but to varying degrees, that it's not clear exactly which one is his position at the moment. But he has said what he'd like to see is, you know, basically initiative and referendum, where the voters of Wisconsin would vote on whether to keep the state's 1849 abortion ban or do something else. But that's not a thing in Wisconsin. We're not one of those states where you can have a referendum to create or take away state laws. We can only do it for constitutional amendments. Well, Tony Evers basically threw him a lifeline and said, you know what, Senator, you're right. Let's do this. Let's have this referendum. Let's call a special session and let's have voters decide whether to keep that 1849 abortion ban. Well, of course, Republicans in the legislature said no, because they saw what happened in Kansas, and they know that in a heartbeat, Wisconsin voters who overwhelmingly supported Roe v. Wade and overwhelmingly opposed the Dobbs decision that got rid of it, they would pass that referendum in a heartbeat, getting rid of that abortion ban. So no, when Ron Johnson says he will pressure Republican lawmakers to put the issue before voters, no. Even he can say, oh, please, guys, do it, please. You know, that's going to be the extent of his pressure, because he knows. Now, what I do take a little issue with is that the same program, and in their Twitter thread, go on to note that Lieutenant Governor Mandela Barnes wouldn't say specifically whether he'd support putting the question of abortion rights before voters in the form of a referendum. Barnes said, I think the people of Wisconsin are already pretty clear on where they are. Well, I think that's the answer. To me, it's awkwardly worded to say Mandela Barnes wouldn't say whether he'd support, you know, a referendum. What he's saying is, we don't need to bother. Look at polls for a decade in this state. There are other things that we have to be working on right now. And so if anything, you would look for him to maybe support a referendum that firmly reestablishes what we had in Roe v. Wade. Look for that rather than, say, initiative and referendum coming in. All right, one more caller. Wisco Paul is with us now. So, Aaron, if you want to put him on. Paul, good morning.
Hey, good morning, Pat. I guess I don't have much time here, but I'm hoping you can help sway some voters in the Northland, because it is pretty red up there, and understand just how bad Johnson is as a senator. You know, he's just a bad man. So welcome aboard, and I hope you can help the northern half of the state understand why Johnson shouldn't be reelected senator. And I'll be listening to you in the morning. And
thank you
for your show.
Hey, thank you, Paul. I appreciate that very much. That's exactly what we're going to be doing. And for those of you that haven't followed the whole path of Up North News and in the radio show, I'll just tell you in our final 30 seconds here that things really got going. I was working on co-founding Up North News. Meanwhile, Kirk Bangstead from the Minocqua Brewing Company Super PAC, he also understood that folks up north have only been hearing one point of view on local radio by and large for the past generation. So he created something called the Up North Podcast, and I helped him out with it on Wednesday nights. Then Civic Media was created, and we have this network of stations that's growing now up north. So I invited Kirk on Wednesday mornings to basically have a version of the Up North Podcast. And now here we are with Up North News Radio, 5 mornings a week starting at 6 a.m. And I am so glad that you're a part of it. You can follow me on Facebook, Pat Kreitlow Up North, or on Twitter at Pat Kreitlow, and of course at upnorthnewswi.com. Have a great day. We'll see you tomorrow.